I'm no slouch. This is nothing new. I got a new and improved, awesome podcast guest. Welcoming Ryan Verrill from Disconnected.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a tough name for some people because of the double C in the middle.
Oh, I was shooting boulders just trying to figure out is the R. How do I press into it? You know, lean into it, enunciating right. It. Just go for it, wing it. What am I afraid of other than inevitable apology?
Could be worse.
You're right. It's not like I owe, I don't know, the mob 5,000. Yeah, so we were just talking back and forth. Hey, we could chat about these different sitcoms, music bands, and everything. I was like, let's hit it. Let's do it. And The Office, the one, the only UK and US, but primarily the US show just came up and was like, yeah, there's plenty to lean into on that. We already did an awesome episode on it, but it doesn't mean we can't revisit our like moments. I mean, it's on TV every day. Like every other network bids for everywhere. It. Every other streaming platform has it. It is. People sign up to Peacock just to see the uncut like fan editions where there's like deleted scenes put back into select episodes.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It might as well still be on.
Well, I mean, it's one of the best comedies of all time. And then on top of that, it was, you know, such a mainstay. It was on for 9 years and it was done through a time where we had that big, like, must-see TV Thursday. And
yeah,
a lot of people that weren't watching live during those days will not understand how heavy Thursdays hit back then. I mean, The yeah. Office, Parks and Rec, Community, 30 Rock, you couldn't beat that. Those are literally four of the best comedy shows of all time, back to back to back to back.
1,000%. Have you listened to any of the Kevin Actor's The Office deep dive?
Yeah, one or two. It's just there's so much that you can get into surrounding the zeitgeist of these. It's hard to like eat all the pop culture.
The fact that it took off because like they leaned into the internet at the time. Let's have some yep. webisodes on NBC. Let's have a Christmas special you can watch for free on Apple. And now we're yeah. seeing Mindy Kaling, Rainn Wilson say, hey, you know, we owe our career to this. We don't think we can make it nowadays. I think they're kind of right. And I don't think that's necessarily they're leaning into the political correctness. I think they're just more where I would come from on that. I would say people are a little still more urgent. They're urchins, but they're urgent in what they want to see. So they're a little right. more impatient. So unless it's something quick like a College Humor or YouTube video, they're often going to shit on your new sitcom. But it's weird because a lot of today's comedy does owe a lot to this kind of mockumentary style. I mean, take away the cameras, there's still just some wacky just back and forth that you're just like, I hope no one ever has to be in a toxic workplace like this while we laugh at
half the comedy that you find on TikTok nowadays or YouTube shorts or anything like that is cringe comedy, which The Office is kind of the one that set the bar for how we can do this in a way that is genuinely funny and doesn't affect any like real people in any awkward ways. And unfortunately The TikTok trends are leaning towards let's prank people in ways that are just not funny and mean a lot of times and call that cringe comedy, and it doesn't work. But now of course you got the I Think You Should Leave on Netflix. That's probably the biggest thing that it's taking cringe comedy to the extreme, and it's fantastic.
I keep hearing about that one. So that's the one with Tim Robinson, Matt Knudsen, Sam Richardson.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I will.
It's amazing.
Okay. I will have to check this out. Wow. Oh man. So this is still going on. Damn. Wow. Okay. I don't know why I thought this was a movie. I kept hearing his name.
Okay, yeah, so they just I think just in May or June put up their third season. And the coolest thing is for those people, those short attention spans, like you brought up, they're very short. It's I don't think any of them even have 8 episodes, and each episode's less than like 20 minutes.
It's really good at being 20 minutes. And half the time you won't realize it even nowadays, even with older sitcoms, you'd be like, oh, that's right. It was less than half an hour because you had to put 40 minutes of ads, you know, five
exactly.
of them.
Exactly.
Well, and I was just telling you about Animal Control while we were off air, and that same deal. That's like barely even 20 minutes. Yeah, it's just quick and to the point. every other character is a douchebag or asshole who's trying to find purpose in their life, and they're kind of having their comfort zone. And then, of course, shit hits the fan. You're like, something's burning in the eye. It breaks the tension. And then you're like, oh, I totally am forgetting where we were going, but I'm along for the ride. man, so this is interesting, too, in that everyone has their favorite character. You can't even choose just one, and it would be boring if you had to pick like one or two who's like the main honcho. But now I don't think even everyone realizes that half the time. It's like, everything's going where it's going.
It's true, and there's so much going on. I mean, even season to season, the characters have changed so much, especially on this show. You know, not only are we adding and taking away characters, but Kelly Kapoor in season one is not the same as Kelly Kapoor in season four, who's not the same as Kelly Kapoor in season nine. They're very, very different.
Yes. And I think that's just it, because everyone's gone on to big careers. Rainn Wilson has a mental health podcast. You know, Mindy's always doing something, but Oscar Nunez was on People of Earth. Everywhere they go, I absolutely am just like, it's like, I don't know how I miss that kind of form of their comedy, because I think we were just, when we were first out, we were focusing on like the first three people, Jim, Pam, and Steve Carell's, you know, Michael, and obviously Rain was playing into the camera the most, and Craig Robinson was interesting in that he would probably have the most just like shameless like remarks. He's like the only one finding time to have a party at the place. I've lost track of how much like the garage and like distribution place flat out is like a hot dog cooking place half the time.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The first few seasons, a lot of people don't remember, we barely saw the warehouse, hardly at all. And every time you went down there, every time you went down there, Craig Robinson stole the camera. He was somebody that, you know, you had to be just stuck to him because he was funny as hell. He had this magnetic personality. And then the writer saw that and they went, well, we got to find a way to get him into the rest of the show. And suddenly he's promoted and he's up in the office with the rest of them. So it's great.
Right. Everybody wins. Oh, man. Exactly. And it is kind of also enlightening to just kind of think to yourself, is like, this was almost always on the verge of getting canceled, like
multiple times.
People didn't think it was funny, or they didn't know what to make of it. You're like, hey, there's no laugh track.
Well, and unfortunately, that's sort of what a lot of people that are innovative, not even just in comedy, but in all forms of entertainment, have to deal with at some point.
They have to surrender. So then everyone's like, why do they look angry? Well, because they're kind of doing something they don't really want to do, and they haven't gotten any feedback.
And a lot of the same sort of feedback has been given to Apple over the years, just as a tech company, that it's the idea of, we'll give you something that you don't know you need, and then by the time that you know you'll need it, we'll be here waiting for you. But unfortunately, with entertainment, some of those times you're not there able to be waiting because you get canceled early.
Oh, yeah. And then followed by, like you say, even more rejection. And it kind of took their piracy, where they're like, we secretly want you to steal it because that tells us it's in high demand, we can up the price. But,
right.
What a dark period to have to kind of go through it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of shows that, you know, stuck on one or two seasons that could have gone for nine, like The Office did.
They could still be on, yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite workplace comedies of all time was Better Off Ted, and we got lucky to get two seasons of that one. And unfortunately, that one was so far ahead of its time that it only got two because it was forced, basically, by the creators to get two. And by the end of the second season, they couldn't justify it because nobody was watching it. And then finally, through streaming, all kinds of people discovered that show and loved it.
Yeah, it's on Hulu, I think, ABC still. Yeah. That's a good call. And kudos, his name always escapes me, but kudos to that creator. He also was the head guy on Andy Richter Controls the Universe. And
yep.
You can find every episode on YouTube without the... It got a DVD release of both Andy Richter sitcoms, but difference was they had to change some music, but which kind of takes away from some of the fun. But
of course,
at least those had special features. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure every other comedian in you know, just person has just been to the point where they're like, what do I have to say differently to just, you know, get a meeting underway?
Right. Yeah, it's not easy out there.
No. Yeah. It's still not getting easy. but I mean, even the shows that have been on TV for multiple years, I mean, New Amsterdam was a hospital show and it just ended, but it was interesting in how it kind of did this whole St. Elsewhere kind of deal where people weren't even sure what was happening and the surprises kind of kept making people lean into it. I mean, there are several times where I would watch an episode and I'd be like, that really moved me. And I'm not one typically for hospital shows that get soapy. Right. So this surprises are pretty much about and kind of what you just need in anything now, if you just want to stand out. And kudos to these guys. Like, they just went for it. Like, they, like, the first few episodes, I mean, I knew it had made its significant point when I was in an economics class in my first year of college and they were playing the Diversity Day episode as how not to act in a workplace. And I was like, see, this is awesome. This is the Whose Line effect, like how to do improv. And there are several moments where, especially in those earlier seasons, where I noticed that where Michael will just be like, just randomly like, do you want to be like Drew Carey or Ryan Stiles on Whose Line? That show is amazing. But I will always encounter that episode at least once a year. Like, it's on TV probably the most. There's certain episodes of shows that you will just keep encountering, and I keep encountering that one, but I just get fog because I'm like, yeah, if he's watching Whose Line, he definitely doesn't know why it's funny. He's just kind of just going along for the ride, being his demented self.
That seems to be the case quite often.
What do you think of how James Spader replaces him and he's basically still an Alan Shore from Boston Legal moment?
You know, I didn't hate it. And that's, you know, primarily because I really loved Spader back in the 80s and 90s. And
right.
Back in the late 80s and early 90s, he more often than not was kind of like this cool, like sexy villain in most of his films.
Yeah.
And he obviously went full bore into that reputation for The Office. And it was... it was taken up that notch.
I hear he's a method actor.
Oh yeah, he took it up that notch because he was just freaking weird at the same time. I mean, the, you know, call me the Lizard King type of lines that he's delivering, it just, you don't know what to expect with a character like that. So it's something that I think it delivered well for when we needed an interesting transition. It certainly left an interesting hole when Michael Scott left, of course. But yeah, he was formidable in his spot.
Nice. That is awesome because everyone else, I mean, I see some people who don't really care for how the show ends, but they'll still watch it anyway because I mean there's still just hysterical moments there. I mean,
right.
And I gotta at least applaud anyone for wanting to just try something new instead of just hang on by just the reins and just be like, I guess we're falling apart slowly but surely. Like, at least there's all these other guys who are trying to be bought. I mean, I still guffaw at the one where it's like everyone's trying out, and Will Ferrell like does a basketball like hoop, and I know it's like they're like, oh, it looks fatal, but apparently in a deleted scene, they revealed that his character actually got like a head trauma and died or something. But just doing the stupidest thing, like, and Jim Carrey and Ray Romano trying out, and they literally like say nothing in their like job interview.
Yeah,
and they're still thinking. They're still feeling optimistic, and you're like, see, this is why I think we latch onto this. Everyone's encountered someone who's been this clueless and made them uncomfortable in their job.
I didn't really think any of it was bad until that last season. And even then, full episodes were never really bad. There was just a lot of stuff that was irritating because they took the characters and took what made us all like them for previous seasons. They were completely different people in that final season.
Oh yeah,
the last episode brought it together. Yeah. But I mean, everything else, God, they made a mess of it
pretty much. I've lost track of how many times I've seen the one where it's like Dwight's like trying to rediscover like his family, and it's like it gets even more uncomfortable. You're like, my God.
That's that cringe for you.
Yeah. I've seen it, I think, too many times where I think I would skip it now. It's just like with any movie, if you've seen it to death, like that, or if you've tasted a chocolate bar that's so delicious like the last 50 times, there's no need to re-taste it.
Right.
Oh man. We can get into this, like some other select moments. What are some other running gags that, like, if you were to introduce someone to the show, like that would be like the runner up if you did a compilation video.
Man, compilation video. The first thing I think to really get somebody sold on The Office is the cold opens. The number of things where you are not prepared for what the episode is going to be. It starts off and it's something ludicrous, like the parkour episode or the parkour cold open. There's just some crazy ones. Like my favorite one of all time probably is when Rainn Wilson pretends for The Office that it's on fire and the entire place goes batshit insane. I mean, Stanley almost has a freaking heart attack. Angela's throwing a cat up into the ceiling. There's people running around. They're throwing copiers at the door. Like it is the most insane, over the top cringe. And you're like, this guy is an idiot for doing all of this, but everything is so like screwball comedy funny through everything because they all believe it. And that's the thing, as they're in that situation, the actors are so good in this that you can tell they actually think this is happening, that there is fire. Love the cold opens. Gosh, the other cold open that really always got to me was Asian Jim.
Oh, yes. Oh, especially in the, what was it, the Operation Midnight. It's like a spy
Yep, that's a
movie
good one.
vision. But yeah, the various Asian conferences, I don't think you could do nowadays, just because we were, even though it was kind of like the Community episode where Chang is in blackface and oblivious to how offensive that is, I think it's the same way. Like, even though you're making fun of something uncomfortable and awful, it still would be a little just, I don't know, people are more likely to just look at you rather than listen to you at first. So you would have so
Right.
many barriers to cut down.
Yeah, it's a lot. And obviously they were like right at the edge of that comedy for most of the runtime of the show. They went right up to that line many, many times.
Totally. Somehow I think most people just shut up. They know what they're in for, and so they're not trying to pull any punches really. It's like, yeah, we know exactly what we signed up for. I mean, just if you don't know what you're after into after the first episode, then you're clearly either not paying attention or not the brightest.
Well, and that's the thing with a show like this. They're not doing this earnestly to make
No.
individuals be the butt
It's
of a
not
joke.
Punk'd or anything where someone will inevitably get hurt. I mean, I was a ex I well, not an expert. I was on an episode of Cheaters. Yes, they filmed that here in Dallas. I was being a method actor who was a control freak with a samurai sword. It was crazy and fun, but it didn't get that way overnight. There were people who almost got injured or had death threats, and they had to. Now, whenever they cast that show, it is more cryptic. They don't want just any freak on the street, but they do want someone with a messed up storyline they can base it around and
Right.
bust you, so to speak. But yeah, no, that's true too. There are people who will do the whole, oh, well, it just makes me uncomfortable. Well, that's kind of the point.
Well, and not even then. It's not to make like in the second episode, I think, when we're talking about Diversity Day, Michael puts I don't even remember what the card is, but he puts a card on Kelly Kapoor's head and goes full into like Indian stereotypes. And
Yes.
it's not that they're making fun of Indian stereotypes.
Right.
They're making fun of Michael Scott's ignorance, and that is the butt of the joke. The people that are so ignorant that they do these terrible stereotypes are the ones that they're laughing at. And that is super important because without that, the cringe factor would be that the people that are making the show are the edgelords that are terrible people. And when you look at it, even in a 2023 lens for something that was made, I don't even remember what 2005 or whatever it was,
Yeah,
the
405. Yeah. So, I
second
mean,
season.
yeah, and that's how I took it too. Like, I didn't even think he had if we even want to go into Mike's Disturbing Mind, I'm sure he wasn't, he doesn't even know where it came from. That's how fucking stupid he is. It probably right. wasn't even on TV, but someone told him a joke, and given how gullible and he's not just ignorant, he's ignorant.
Well, and the thing is, if you look at when it was made, if it came out in 2004, it was played in real time. He yeah. was meant to be, you know, early 40s to late 40s, most likely, which means dude was a full-on boomer. And what we're seeing nowadays is the people that are stuck in the boomer mindsets are the ones that are ignorant without knowing that they're ignorant. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what they came from, because everybody did that in the 60s and 70s and early 80s.
Yeah.
And it took until now to realize, hey, I probably shouldn't do that. And Michael Scott's the perfect example of somebody that didn't realize that.
Totally. They're not even the whole, you know, fuck you if you can't take a joke. Like, they're in the right. whole, well, you're taking it too seriously, you know, just while totally just oblivious to, again, how insensitive it is. But
right.
yeah, no, that is true. The real time helps, and it kind of even reminded you. And I think that's why it caught on to people. They're like, oh my God, yeah, I've had an assistant manager who was a douche like that, you know, or who yep. made, you know, slapped on the ass. And I mean, I take it. If you've been to college, you've had a college professor who was rather vocal, and you were like, man, if I wasn't fully invested in to win it, I would totally slap his ass. You know, I would I would slap him in the fucking face and say, you're a pig.
I am grateful I went to college online.
You're right. So if you didn't like it. Oh, man. Oh man, it is also just one of those where we also and we basically we had to also just process this slowly, and we see everyone's just kind of, you know, moments on their faces. I've seen fans start doing the whole Jim's actually kind of a bad person. I'm like, well, yeah, because he's sick of these guys, so he's playing pranks on them just so he can have a laugh going home, right. knowing that I'm the smarter guy. I could just quit, but I'm having too much fun just mocking these morons.
Well, and just like many comedies, especially around that time, kind of everybody on the show ends up being just a bad person at heart.
Yeah.
There's so many things that they should not have done that makes them be just a part of their character. I mean, look how many times Stanley, the butt of the joke, was that he was having an affair. And they didn't, you know, shy away from that. He actually was visibly having an affair.
Yes. Oh, Stanley.
And that probably leads to one of my other favorite moments is Stanley's reactions to everything. And you know, setting up my segue for that, all I could think about were two specific scenes. One is his beautiful reaction to Pretzel Day and how much he loves Pretzel Day. And it was so relatable as a giant fat man, how much Pretzel Day can make my week so much better. And then the other one is him blowing up on Ryan for being inappropriate. And he, you know, jumped all over with the boy, have you lost your mind? Because I'll help you find it. It was such a relatable, like, no, you messed up, and Stanley is giving it to you. And it was just perfectly acted.
Yeah, I really wish he could do a little more. I've only seen him in, like, the Happy Time Murders, making right. fun of angry police chiefs and, like, various, like, commercials. But yeah, I can't see anyone else in that role either. Like, that's how perfect the casting was. Like, they just... And it's so funny how they didn't think they were going to get the role, but they just leaned into it. They're just like, yeah, I mean, it reminds me of how Marilyn Rajkov from Mr. Show and Larry Saunders got the role of Chloe in 24 by being nervous, which is exactly what the role needed. And yeah, I mean, I think everybody just, when you're on edge, that's just how good a performance you're going to get. Like, there were plenty of blockbuster directors who I don't think are very good with comedy who guest directed episodes. That's how well polished the thing was. It was just no escaping it. What's your favorite no reaction from Mike Is it whenever Toby, who's doing his job, telling him, hey, Michael, you can't do that, you know, I'm the bureaucrat.
I mean, it's got to be a Toby reaction, but I think the one that is over the top enough is his explanation that if he had a gun with two bullets and he was in a room with Hitler,
yeah, oh my God.
That he would kill Toby twice. That is such like a mean and unnecessarily antagonistic line that you can, I've had bosses that were so terrible that I could picture them saying something like that.
Yeah.
And I just can't fathom putting that in a show. It's so funny, so well written. And that was the thing. These people that are acting as these individuals were the main writers on the show. So
yeah, Toby was one of the writers. So it's like, be mad at me.
They could feel the characters and be like, no, you hate me. Let me write this so that you can just be incensed with me.
And the comedy will come out. And that's true. So because they're very meta, very philosophical and kind of spiritual, I think that played into it too. But yeah, no, I mean, in that same scene, doesn't he say something like, if there was a choice between Toby or Hitler, I pick Toby every time. That's how ignorant he is. It's like, if you think Toby is worse than Hitler, you need some serious therapy, buddy.
Yep, stuck in a room with a gun with two bullets, and he'd take Toby out twice.
Right, and then it gets even more disturbing when you realize, like, just everybody else who's dating him is half the time is, like, kind of abusing Michael in a way, too.
Oh, yeah. And then the other Toby one that I really love is after Toby gets divorced and he's leaving the office and he says, well, you're leaving us and you're divorced. So you've lost your family twice or however he says it. It's just so personal. Michael just does not care about Toby's feelings at all.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but yeah.
Zero empathy.
I don't see how he could be empathetic. He's like just so we get hints of what happened over his lifestyle, but he won't let us in because I don't think he knows.
Right.
For all we know, he could have been molested, he could have been like constantly abused, he could have been like overfed and somehow worked out. And I don't know how he even stays skinny given how he just sits at his desk so often just doing pranks.
Yeah, well, I mean, with Michael, one of the ways we know how he stays skinny, and that's by one of my other favorite moments, and that's because he uses a George Foreman grill to not only cook bacon every morning but burn the hell out of his foot. And that is such a just a silly character trait to throw in about somebody. Like the fact that he wakes up to an alarm, starts bacon cooking, and then goes back to sleep to wake up to fresh bacon is brilliant writing. That's like next level character development that nobody else would think to do.
Yeah, and because of how sparse in the moment is, you know, you're not even picking it apart and nitpicking. Was it, you know, made up on the fly? Was it improvised? Was it scripted? Right. Was it just spur of the moment? It doesn't matter. It works. Lean into it more. But yeah, that's true. Cause anyone else would want to just start a rivalry with another show. And because they're kind of just, everybody was kind of doing a bit of everything. It did kind of get to that point where it's like, hey, you know, Arrested Development's doing its own thing, you're doing its own thing, Boston Legal's definitely doing its own thing. Just you guys do you. don't be worried about the other. And I've never even seen anyone even compare the others. It's just they were kind of all doing
right
kind of what all the crime shows were doing at the time. And like there's 24, there's CSI, and then there's Sopranos, you know. Pick your
and 16 versions of Law and Order.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, every other Dick Wolf show with a gavel hit and a hard-boiled cop who's kind of cool but very problematic. And yeah, it's just you can pick it all. It all works, or maybe it doesn't. Maybe, you know. And I'm the same thing with doctor shows. I've been watching all these other ones that are somehow doing away with all the soap and just kind of just leaning into the medical stuff. And like, see, this is a good change of pace after that subgenre has been kind of wrecked for me. And yeah, same thing with sitcoms. I'm seeing even shows that generally would probably have a laugh track or just kind of more comfortable doing something like, hey, let's have a live interaction or let's have an actual audience. Like we'll have an right. audience, but it's going to actually be existing, not added in later in post. And I couldn't see The Office as a sitcom. I don't think it would be funny if we had to remind people to laugh.
Well, I don't think a laugh track makes it a sitcom necessarily.
Right. No. I don't mean that, but I just mean, like, if they wanted to make it a typical, like, late night show as done in the 80s.
Right.
Because generally, most of us wouldn't laugh in the moment. We'd be like, oh dear. You know, just like, it would be more of a just slowly vetting it out.
It would have been a very awkward live studio audience show for sure.
They'd be like, happening, because generally, you know, just like test screenings, that studios don't tell people what to think beforehand because they want the raw energy. And
right,
half the time, if you just give a synopsis, they know what to think before going into it. But who do you think has had the most unproductive lifestyle? There's Meredith. There's
in the show or after the show?
Oh no, just in the show. Yeah, no, everyone's doing good so far, I think.
In the show, man. Yeah, it's probably got to be Meredith. But at
Kevin
the same time, there's
also seems to probably have diabetes, I think, at this point.
I mean, you can have diabetes and still be productive. He seems to be everywhere. At least Meredith doesn't seem to be doing much, other than like trading sex acts for gift cards, I guess.
Oh my god. Yes.
there's so many like loose ends that I would have loved to have heard about some of the home lives of some of these characters that we just never got. But you know, the main ones that we did get were so fleshed out that it was more than enough. You know, we got enough with Dwight's home life and with Michael's home life and Jim. Yes. And Pam. It was nice to dive into all of those. And really, like, I was trying to think of one of my other favorite moments that I would throw in here at the end, and I kind of wanted to go with a whole episode, which is a cheat, and I know that, but the dinner party episode where you bring all of these people together is this culmination of all of the cringe ever on the show.
Oh, it's so raw, and especially the way they shoot it with like the neon lights and like, yep, everything is like the best looking place ever. And it's like everyone, you're not sure what's more dead, the room or everyone's soul in that moment.
Yeah, the constant jabbing between Jan and Michael is rough, but then you see, you know, Dwight and Jim and Pam and everybody respond in a way that shows their humanity, which is kind of rare for Dwight especially. And yes, it's nice to see them in that awkward situation at home and not in the workplace, so they could be a little more personal. But yeah, that episode always gets a giant laugh out of me. There's probably 10 or 15 lines that are like all-timer great lines just in that one episode.
Yes. And as a disclaimer, I didn't mean to imply that Kevin was unable to function due to his diabetic nature. I'm just saying he eats like a motherfucker, just like constantly, like set, like, yep, even when he gets to the point where he's like tricking people into buying him candy, and it's like, yeah, of, yep, course you're that's how petty you are. Of course you're gonna
that
eat
and
all the
dropping chili all over the floor.
Oh yeah, yeah. And he gets off on it, kind of. He just loves seeing people react to all the grossness, and you're like, yeah, and this guy definitely never got spanked as a kid. He probably got told to just sit in a corner. And but oh man, but yeah, no, the restaurant scenes are always like the perfect. I mean, even had, I think, Chip Esten in there briefly, and he's like, it's always funny how like at first you think all the bureaucrats who are coming in checking in on him are going to be just very just polite and down to earth, and of course half of them are psychos too.
Yeah.
It's like, how did you get to where you are?
Exactly.
And sometimes even Michael will have a moment of truth where he's like, what are we even talking about?
Yeah,
as a man who often instigates and starts all the nonsense. What are we talking about?
Right.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates, Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's breakfast time. Listen at breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
What do you think about the one where Michael thinks that he's being loan sharked and he gets all these guys in, and then of course it's just like, no, you took all this stuff out of sequence, dude. What are you talking about? I'm not scamming you.
There are lots of financial things for Michael that are always funny. And then obviously, the best scene when it comes to his money is him walking into the center of the office and yelling, "I declare bankruptcy." It doesn't get any more bumbling than that. It is such a fun, like, wow, this makes me realize what type of a person I'm dealing with for the rest of the show.
Oh, and I've lost track of how many times, like, Andy, Dwight, or Jim, or even just they switch off with the two of them. Like, sometimes they're actually getting along, and other times, like, Dwight is literally, like, shit-talking while Jim is driving, and I love how he'll look at the camera, and half the time you can get a move aside from just, like, hey, technically the camera wouldn't be there, but hey, it just works better just from a comedy standpoint if he just looks right this way. Like,
exactly.
No one can see it now, but just minding my time. Yeah. Just head on chin, just eye rolling. And it is wild how they had to practice a lot of that. It's like, don't look directly into it. It's not funny, because I know Parks and Rec actually tried that, because when they started, they wanted to be kind of a mockumentary version of the West Wing, and they had to kill all the footage. Like, the producers were like, it's not funny if we do the walk and talk. It's just too overwhelming. It somehow works for the serious show, but it doesn't work as a comedy because there's just too much to kind of lean into and do all at once. I especially love it when L.A. Kemper's character, I always forget it, it's not Kimmy Schmidt, but she's owning that role too. when she is like getting back together with her mom, and is like, it's what's her name from like Matlock?
Yeah, her name's Erin.
Erin. Yes.
I would just now I'm just envisioning Kimmy Schmidt actually being a character in The Office, and how funny that would have been.
That would have worked too. It was like, yeah, she was adopted by a cold, had to raise herself in New York. But I think that's why, if anything, this the Erin character definitely gave Kemper like more to just like lean on, and I think they always got her character right, even when there were some episodes that kind of slogged in later seasons. It's like, yeah, but they moved away from her being gullible for Andy versus, I want to do this, I want to do that. And
right.
Just making fun of kind of, it's so weird. It's like, she's like a mixture of like a Valley Girl and just like the cousin who comes over and has a fun recreational party without any sex or drugs or anything.
The hard part with Erin, and I agree. I pretty much always loved her. She was always really fun on there. But I feel like, especially in the last, I don't know, three seasons, they tried to have too many just downright stupid characters. Like,
oh yeah,
they took Andy from being insufferable to being a complete idiot. Erin was always made to be really dumb. Kevin was made to be really dumb. Michael
was too much stupidity for its own good. Yeah.
Yeah. Michael was always played to be just the most ignorant piece of junk.
I'm with you. I don't hate them, but when there was some of the other guys flirting with Erin, and the other guy with glasses from Hot Tub Time Machine, who Dwight is basically wanting to be his next of kin, that's where I was like, okay, you're doing a little too much there. I mean, you don't really notice it at first, because that's the other thing with this show. When you're first watching an episode, you're reacting to it versus processing it. And then it kind of makes you wonder at the same time, what would I have even done differently? Because I don't think they would even know what they could have done differently, because it was raw and in the moment. But inevitably, I mean, at least they're mature enough and they can even talk about skits that they don't think even land nowadays.
Yeah. And thankfully, most of them did. So that's not even something that they get to touch on.
Yeah. I think there's maybe only like one or two episodes my sister always like skips that are just like you get it, but it's just a little too dry. And it's like, I can see that. But sometimes that's even, it kind of even leans into like a Tim and Eric predicament or Funny or Die, where it's like, it's funny because it's not, but at least I can't call it hackneyed because it was intended to just kind of just be like, oh, it's the worst idea ever. Let's do it.
And I feel that way about most of the first season, which a lot of people just don't like because it's so just workplace comedy.
At least it was 10 episodes.
You know? Right. And it's not over the top like the rest of them. So, yeah, I get that.
They leaned into it, too, by also saying we had to kind of fill there just to get it down.
Yeah.
Because no one ever knows what formula is working in the moment, even if it's on the page, because half the stuff on the page doesn't make it, and other stuff on the page is more flamboyant or over the top than you even initially realized. So, yeah.
Well, and the other thing that we've barely even brought up so far, they were following on the heels of a very successful British show that they're basically remaking kind of, but also doing incredibly differently. So they had a lot of pressure, especially with Ricky Gervais being involved.
I that's why I loved when he showed on there, because like even if you weren't familiar with it, like you knew something was up.
Yep.
And I totally like I love that too, because like not only was it kind of meta regardless of whether you got it or not, I was like, yeah, I mean, who knows, for all we know he probably has come overseas and he's found more idiots to join his clan. And I love how he kind of, like, Michael is even more full of himself, where he thinks, you know, he's the center of the universe. He's just waving at him like, you should know who he is. And of course, but it is wild how the UK version was kind of just slowly circulating and not really like as known, except to like bigwigs in Hollywood who were remaking it. It was kind of like the Homeland effect, where it's like a lot of people knew about it, but not everyone had seen it because it hadn't really syndicated yet.
Well, and we didn't have streaming yet, so it wasn't something that you could just go hop onto in Netflix.
Unless you had like one of those PBS kits where you could buy like $40 worth of excellent quality, you know, masterpiece theater programming. Yeah, you didn't have it.
Right.
You know what? Since we're talking about the UK office, I gotta say the episode where future award winner Olivia Colman comes in is just perfect. It's like she just works in anything, like just. She's just very charismatic, but like she just comes in and she's just like kind of just leaning in, just smiling. Okay. and then she's just looking at the camera like, what did you just say?
Well, speaking of back around then, I mean, she was incredible in Hot Fuzz. I knew that she could do a lot of really great stuff. Yeah. I've loved her for a long time.
I didn't even realize like, when she was award winner, I was like, I know that name. And sure enough, I look at her like, oh, the gal from that Broadchurch thing that they remade with the same cast here in the States. Yeah, okay, wow, okay.
She's been in everything,
every fucking thing ever. And just very tight, very leans into just kind of the ensemble.
Exactly.
but, I mean, I think that was also what's wild. I mean, it's easier, I think, to get into the UK show once you've seen the US version, because now you know which character is trying to be what, because they talk so fast and it's different culture and everything.
Yeah, and that's seeing the main differences afterwards is super rewarding. But I gotta admit, when you've seen the British office before you see the US office, I understand why a lot of people didn't love the US office at first when they had seen that one. It's
It was too much at first. Yeah, and a lot of just kind of pointing in the right direction, but you still had to kind of make a backstory for everything. I mean, you even look at other shows that were groundbreaking, that were always poorly rated, but just so acclaimed. Anything from Homicide: Life on the Street to every other X-Files kind of knockoff show is like, it didn't get there right away, and thank God for DVD and later streaming and Blu-ray. But it didn't happen overnight.
Unfortunately true.
I mean, it's even funnier how TV people love TV so much that it even makes you wonder who, like, would that show exist without the other show? You don't want to kill your darlings. You don't want to do a...
Right. And the crazy thing is to look at how much has come from the individual that got big from The Office that we haven't even mentioned yet. And that's real. I'm going to use his character name just to be funny, but Cousin Moe's. He is the one that developed Parks and Rec. He developed The Good Place. He developed Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like,
oh, yes. Yes, yes.
These are continuing to be some of the biggest comedies of all time. And without the success of The Office, yeah, he may have been a writer on a bunch of shows, but would he have had the chance to do all these? Absolutely not.
Yeah, he would not have gotten literally plans A through F, you know?
Like, right.
At this point, he could make it to Z. He could make it to the end of the finish line, definitely. Yeah, I've seen so many of them kind of cross over with one another. And that was at the point where it just seemed like everybody just was so comfortable with their experimentation. And hearing Ed Helms talk about how he was so fearless with doing the Andy role was just an eye opener in and of itself, because he was just like, what's the worst that happens? The worst I do is I file for, you know, unemployment in 3 months, but that's not going to happen.
Right.
I feel confident. I've done The Daily Show for almost half a decade. I want to move on.
Yeah.
I think The Daily Show gave some good training. That was the same kind of deal. I mean, say what you will about the politics and everything. It was just interesting how it's both a sketch show and a mock news show, and being part of, again, of an ensemble. And, you know, Steve Carell had done that, but they weren't always in the same scene. So I think, I think a lot of that kind of plays into it. I mean, I would even see some people on there who were on anything from like Mad TV or In Living Color. You just all these other guys who have been doing this for decades, and just I do have to give Ken Kwapis a bunch of, you know, applause though, just for having, when he said in his Raw interview, he noted how he had done a similar thing back when he did Larry Saunders, where it was like, don't have the AD call, you know, sound rolling, just motion, and like film some Raw interviews without the sled realizing the camera is on them, so that way they don't have to pretend to play a real version of themselves.
Just, right.
I think that's just it. Like, just all these other little perks and everything.
Yeah, and you know, obviously the big thing behind a lot of these comics that we haven't said yet is just improv training. The Steve Carell has a massive history in it, and then following on with that, you have Amy Poehler leading in basically the same position for Parks and Rec. And if you have somebody who is so nuanced in improv that they can respond to anything, sure, great writers around, everybody's going to help, but no matter what, you have this core component that will be able to basically rescue any scene, even if it just completely flubs. So it's nice to have that sort of star power and star making ability with those people.
Totally. That is true. Everyone now kind of goes back to the investor thing. Oh, what's going to generate, you know, now that movie stars are doing TV. When I saw this one thing, I don't think it was from Forbes, but it was a similar site, and they were showing, it was like, Jeffrey Donovan made $10 million each episode of Shut Eye. Kevin Costner's making $30 million an episode of Yellowstone. You're like, oh man. So now that's the model, yeah, I don't think it would last as long, because I think it's just now it's kind of more of a who's first. It's back to being the who's first versus who's good and who wants to follow and be like that. And what does the investor want that's going to generate a lot of money but still might be a piece of shit?
Yeah, I'd say that almost depends on the show itself, for sure. Like, Yellowstone obviously is established, especially because it had the writing ability of Taylor Sheridan. But
yeah,
I mean, there's a lot.
It could be the worst thing in the world, and it would still be great. You would still look at it, because it's a weird mixture of like Dallas and Sopranos.
Yep.
And it is cool that everyone's at that point now. Everyone has all these other fandoms that are talked about, but you still kind of look around, navigate. And I mean, there's all these other crime shows that in a post Breaking Bad world, like Kingdom, Ray Donovan, and even the Power TV franchise is a big one on Stars, but not everyone's following it. But yeah, I'm sure you could, if you go to any like forum or internet thing, you're going to find plenty of fan fiction for anything nowadays. And, you know, I'm sure The Office has plenty of hysterical ones that would have been like, oh, someone should have totally made that.
Guaranteed. Yeah.
And just like the 9/11 episode of Seinfeld that never happened.
True.
What would you say is your favorite character? I know they're all bastards, but like, who is your favorite that is just like, I can't imagine the show without them? Like, if you take this away, like, this is not the perfect crafted cheesecake that this show is.
Well, not to get all sentimental at the end, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same exact way that went through a lot of the same life experiences at the same time, but throughout the start of The Office, towards the end of The Office, is when I had met and fell in love with my now wife. And aww, through everything, the Jim and Pam story was always a mirror here. And not only because of the way that, you know, it was a romantic lead in the show, but Pam was on the verge of marrying somebody else. And yeah, both my wife and I, surprisingly, married other people. And eventually found our way back to each other.
Oh, man.
And so we dated when I was like 14 and she was like 12, 13, something like that. And eventually came back more than a decade later. And the way that life just made that weird. And it felt like that meant to be aspect of Jim and Pam. So, I mean, just as the male that I am, like, Jim, it was the core element of the show for me. And obviously the show framed him a lot as the main character, but it was interesting to put myself in the, not only am I facing, you know, workplace, you know, going into life and trying to find a career, kind of like Jim was, but facing a lot of the same things.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Right. Finding awesome. A true love and all that. So,
and yeah, kudos to them, because they weren't sure how they wanted to shoot that. And then finally they said, we got to do it this way. Everyone's leaning in on it. It works better. Too close, yep, to this material. Because they were just afraid, oh no, the network's giving us notes. We've got to have a, you know, some formulaic, you know, romantic triangle,
but right,
I think it worked because the audience responded to it so much. There was just no denying it. It's just clearly, yeah, it's in the room. It's an emotion that must be, and just like you said, you were talking about improv earlier. I mean, you know how it is. Improv dies if you negate it. So
yep,
if it's an emotion in the room, eventually you got to acknowledge it. You got to embrace it and just say.
Well, and based on that, because they embraced it, look at how many parts of the show that are gold that we got from it. And not just the future of Jim and Pam, but like the Roy fight where he comes in and Dwight defends, yeah, Jim. Or,
that is, you know, so funny.
Going to Roy's wedding, how awkward that was for Jim and Pam later. Or, you know, the incredibly tension relieving kiss between Jim and Pam after the Dundies. There's so much in this that pays off because they made a certain decision.
Absolutely. And to just ignore it would have been, I think it would have deprived everyone, because you just need at least two people to be less imperfect or,
yeah,
somewhat normal compared to the others. Otherwise you will completely just be like, where's this going? I'm tuning out, it's too much.
Right.
Yeah, because those were kind of just our comforts. Sometimes half the time the camera would lean in on this, and like you say, we would be guffawing at how someone else is snooping in on them and they're realizing they're a failure, and that gives us a chuckle because we're like, yeah. at least they finally put two and two together, so that's funny.
Right.
But no, that's wild. That is so cool when a show that's abnormal and not even trying to be like real life still kind of hits a note that's real, and you're just like, whoa, hey, you know, see, that was an inspired filmmaking choice to somehow make this thing that you can't even it's very hard to even be constructive about, let alone comprehend in a coherent fashion. It's somehow,
right,
it hit these little layers that is, yeah, it's the Shrek quote, onions, they have layers.
Exactly. And you know, you got to do something semi-right eventually, and even, yeah, with all the chaos going around them, they seem to go back to the right way eventually.
I take it you read the Save the Cat book Just talking about screenwriting, and I loved how they talked about the if your hero is invincible, then everything else has to shift around. I'm like, oh, okay, perfect. So everyone around Rambo or James Bond has to get blown up, and they have to at least cry at the very end after all the carnage. But yeah, then it with comedy, same deal. It's like if you got a douchebag or asshole who's just still just will not use their cranium, at least they got to be fired or they got to have some other kind of amusing thing that just affects everyone else around them. And just I loved how even before Michael eventually leaves, that I think that is the biggest irony. It's an emotional episode and he left on his own accord out of love, which is so funny because the whole first few seasons where he was there, we thought, oh, he's gonna get fired at the end of the season. There's just no way. and somehow found a way, sexed his way to the top, or just said something less dumb, or he's the only guy available. So they're just like, we'll let this wait. You get to keep your job this year, but man, Michael, what the hell?
Yeah, he made a lot of bad choices over the course of the show.
Oh, and what do you think is the funniest, like, animal attack or air ventilation prank? There's almost always something misbehaving in that damn office. It's hard to believe that it is a film set at times. It looks so raw, like an actual.
Well, if it counts as a air ventilation one, I will count the gym prank of hiding Andy's cell phone in the ceiling and driving him crazy with his own ringtone.
Oh, yeah, there's that and various buttons he's literally pressing, and each time he opens his desk, like something comes out and like splat, like a balloon explodes or something. Jim had no shortage of gadgets, man, but it's even better when he like tricks someone else with all the rumors and gossip into doing a prank for him, and Dwight's still like oblivious. He's like, oh, Jim wouldn't do that. He's not that smart. It's like, yeah, he totally wouldn't do that. He is that bright. Of course, Dwight. The game is afoot again. It almost reminds me of the Sean Connery skit on SNL, the game's afoot, Trebek. Just the whole this back and forth. It's like, you even forget why they even hate each other after a while. And Dwight thinks he's smart. He's really not smart. And then Jim is just like, I'm just putting in the 9-to-5 just so I can go home. Oh. Was there any, I can't even remember if there was ever a moment where someone did the typical prank where you sit on the photocopier or something. I think there was.
I don't think there was anything there, like, was
talk
that
of it. Yeah. I mean, they didn't ever really go to the restroom all that much, but it was interesting how you would have thought they would have, since it was kind of a common, like, they're addressing just about anything else that's happened in an actual workplace.
Right.
They pretty much just kept it with, hey, everyone's asking Michael for overtime or if they can take vacation off. And of course, he's not going to honor that because he has no concept of union rights.
Yep. Yeah, he doesn't care.
And even if he did, he just doesn't know what it means. He just comes to work when he wants to.
True.
Jeez. Oh, what's your favorite on foot moment where they're just walking around town?
Oh man, I really enjoy seasons 3 and 4. So this is probably a really cliche answer, but
no, that's fine.
The fun run episode with the entire office going on the fundraiser.
That
is
was
so
the first
great
one I saw all the way through. Like, I'd seen bits and pieces of it, but by this point, like 07, everyone was watching it. Even if they were hate watching it, they were watching it. And yeah, he opens it up. He's like, I have hemorrhoids. And you're like, why would you shout that? Why would you shout that?
And then all capped off at the end by Michael puking his guts out. But I mean, really, the biggest thing to me is that we have Dwight and Angela really going at their secret relationship here, and the fact
which
that Dwight
really
killed
all that
her
secret
cat
anymore.
Right.
Oh God, yeah, and it's so wild how everyone feels like they're being watched, but ironically, they're not being watched at the time they think they're being watched.
Right.
And then someone comes in and is like, "Oh, I just got here." They'll talk to like the documentary crew. Everyone hates this, but I actually like it when the documentary crew gets a little more interactive, because half the time it was like the camera crew actually interacting with them or laughing in the moment. I love it when you were talking about the Better Off Ted. I love how that guy, the Christomakalis, is like the documentary guy who somehow thinks for some reason that he and Pam have a connection. So he just,
yeah,
he like beats up the guy in front of him, and like the camera like falls to the side like it would if you abandoned it.
Yeah, I didn't hate the whole documentary crew being interactive in those later seasons. I thought that was an interesting touch to keep it going. It was the other stuff that started to falter and bring down the quality for me.
Yeah, like you say, everyone just got too fucking stupid for their own good. Yeah. And that's where you're just like, okay, it kind of made the show a little less marathonable, where you're like, okay, that's too much stupidity for one day. It's kind of,
well, and I kind of get it. They feel the pressure to keep going wilder and wilder, and the only way to do that is to make people dumber. So
yeah. In all fairness, though, I think you, in a way, Michael was kind of unofficially kind of the groundskeeper.
He should have been.
Yeah, in a way. And it's so funny how many private meetings they'll arrange and they'll all kind of dismiss themselves from the room without his permission. Right. But because he doesn't even know when to conclude it, he's just going on a rant and a tangent. But yeah, in a way, with all the other morons entering the picture, they would get probably dumber. But like you say, it's still a little formulaic at times, to where you're just like, okay, I need a filter, I need a breather.
Right.
This is corrupting my brain. I feel like my brain is actually melting as a result of how dumb they are. Oh, but I mean, it is inevitable. I mean, just like there's going to be dumb people who watch South Park or The Simpsons, there was probably going to be dumb people who are like, I want to be like Michael Scott. I'm like, oh, Lord have mercy. Please say no. I think we've gone through like just about so many highlights. Obviously, there's countless other ones. I mean, but yeah. Out of all the actors who have had a big career since, who have you liked kind of more in the formula? Like Mindy Project kind of leaned into that a bit, just a weird private clinic with weird people.
I mean, just based on my own personal interest, I'm going to lean into the same character, John Krasinski, here and say that he directing a horror Quiet movie and writing more and staying in that lane and doing very well is impressive as hell to me.
He did a dysfunctional dramedy with Marco Martindale and Anne Kendrick. It was really heartwarming. And just seeing that, I was like, see, that would not have happened with The Office had he not been on there, had he not been an intern on Conan, had he not done all these other comedy group segments. I just finished Jack Ryan actually the other week, and what's funny is there was a moment where he just looked at the camera and he had like a funny quirk, and I was like, see, that is Jim coming out of the Jack Ryan. I realize that he's the head producer in the show, but I mean, kudos to him on even running that show along with the other showrunners, because like season 3 got delayed by COVID, and then it got delayed an extra year because they went through like 3 different showrunner arguments. Oh, and geez. It was kind of like the Ted Lasso effect. Like everyone was like, we got a 4-season deal, we have to move on to the next best thing after this. You know, we can't, you know, delay it any further, and we can't, you know, this is only fresh for so long. You know, we don't want to do this to death, and especially when we have this contract freedom, you know, why would you lampoon yourself unintentionally? Why would you, you know, screw it up when this is so good with what you have now? You know?
Of course. Yeah.
In fact, have you seen Ted Lasso?
I actually haven't. I don't have Apple TV, and no, I need to get it.
The amusing part when you're watching it, definitely watch it with a crowd of people, because there's 10 things going on all at once. Often in a scene, someone's throwing something in the background, someone's eating something inappropriately, someone else is doing something that they talked about 5 episodes ago, and they're just now doing it in the thick of something. So like, you will have to rewind multiple times just to find every single Easter egg or skit. Like,
sounds like Arrested Development.
It is. And it's, but it goes back to improv. Like, what am I doing in this scene? Well, I'm just, how about this guy trips someone in the hallway or sports practicing? And it is funny because not everyone is comfortable doing that. Some people just want to do 3 things at once as opposed to 20.
Yeah. And I mean, Arrested Development kind of set the pace on that. And a lot of shows have tried to do it and not done very well. So
no,
that's good to hear.
Well, and plus, I would even kind of cringe with that when Will Arnett would kind of do a similar show, and is like, ah, damn it, I just want you to go back to Arrested Development, dude.
Right, right.
Because that's just it too. You don't know how much of it is how they're being framed and how they're doing the staging versus just the main creative or main lead doing his own interpretation. It's so many factors. It's tough to even weigh. And I think this is why comedy is still a little cryptic now. People just still think, oh, you follow a script. I'm like, well, to an extent.
Exactly.
So this has been a delight. Anything you would like to promote before we shuffle?
Sure. Disconnected is a lot of things all at once. So I will kind of throw everything out there. If you are into physical media, meaning Blu-rays, Woo! 4Ks, DVD, all of that, I post announcements every single time something comes out, every single time something goes on sale. Everything I can do to share. Yep. So I do that. I do a live show on YouTube and Twitch every Thursday night to go over all the announcements of the week. And I always have a guest. So we go through all of the announcements and then have some sort of film discussion. Just last night, it's Friday. It feels like this was 4 days ago. Last night, I had somebody from Norman Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, that came on and told us about everything they've done for film restoration. And we talked about silent films and beyond that. I put up a interview with a somebody in the film industry every single Monday on my YouTube channel. I've got a wonderful Patreon that I've got a lot of people that have signed up, and we've got a really bustling Discord. I put out a newsletter every month.
You definitely have a lot watch alongs in even just your wording.
Yeah.
Versus video, I can tell.
I've got too much going on. I pretty much never sleep.
Sleep? What's that?
Exactly.
I guarantee you no one on this show slept.
Well, thanks for having me on. This has been Absolutely. This has been fun. Thanks for letting me share about Disconnected.
You owned it.
Good.
Owned it. You owned it.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.